Charlie Lyons.
I love talking to former athlete. She's a former D1 athlete, volleyball player, and now she wrote a great book on leadership. You know, just the background of these high achieving athletes, how she was able to bring it all together. She focuses on the youth, and her book is Average to All-Star, Equipping Young Leaders to Start Strong and Go Further Faster, because she has teenage kids. And so she kind of, you know, she sees it through the lens in that. And I always had the discussion about the difference between a leader and a manager. And her answer to that was the first I've ever heard this perspective. It was absolutely wonderful. She's got these three spheres that she, you know, wants emerging leaders to go through, that need to go through to become a leader. I did ask her at one point, if anyone could be a leader, you know, do you have to be born that way? You have to be born with it. Fascinating discussion. Of course, I always bring up technology and AI. Where is that in leadership? But just a great conversation with Charlie. So so full of life and great experiences, great quotes from her book as well. Just a great conversation about leadership with Charlie Lyons. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, you know, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family, in their passion, in their careers, and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration.
Unless you have any final coaching tips for me.
Charlie Lyons, let's talk. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Okay, so what does it mean to first attempt in learning?
Fail. Yes. When I learned that, I don't remember where I picked that up. That was just one of the jewels that I've picked up over the course of my lifetime. One of those things that you pick up. It's kind of like going on a seashell hunt. You pick up things throughout your life and career that you pick up. You don't pick up all of the shells, but you pick up certain ones. And I remember picking up fail. Because so many times as people, as a former athlete, many times like fail is a bad thing, right? Like you do everything you can do to avoid failure. And when I heard fail as first attempt in learning, F-A-I-L, the teacher part of me and the coach part of me just started singing. I was like, oh, it totally turned my thought process about failure upside down. And I hope that I am able to convey that to those that I coach. You know, I have two teenagers, and so I do a lot of coaching within my walls. I know, Joe, you said you're an empty nester. No. I will be that here in about 2.5 years or so. So I do a lot of coaching with teenagers in my own home. And so that has changed our perspective on failure. And I like to think that my kids almost, you don't necessarily want to welcome failure, but you know that there's purpose in it, right? That there's something here for me to learn. And that's what first attempt in learning. That's the aha moment that I had when I very first heard that.
You know, as a parent, you know, I want my children to learn. And so part of learning is failing. And you just hope that it doesn't hurt that much and they really value the lesson and they don't let it happen again. But you could say the same thing about me, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Not you, but me. I mean, all of us. I hear exactly what
all
you're saying.
Of us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a leader and a manager, Charlie?
To me, initially, a leader is someone who works with and through people, and a manager works with and through tasks.
Huh.
Right? Huh. So that's the huge difference that I see. Managers still do have to work with people, and sometimes leaders do still have to work with tasks, but that's the big difference to me.
Whoa. Yeah, because I always look at it as, you know, I've had managers before in my organization, and they thought they were leaders. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, just because you have the title manager doesn't mean you're a leader, but that's very interesting. Managers day to day, it's tasks, it's metrics. Leader is kind of looking forward, looking with the direction. But yeah, linking it to people and tasks, that's a very much cleaner way to look at it. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Actually, in my book, I love there's a quote that I have in there by Harvey Firestone. And it says the growth and development of leaders, or the growth and development of others, is the highest calling of leadership. Mm. It's not about tasks. It's about people. I believe that leaders solve problems and serve people.
Hmm.
When I boil leadership down, they solve problems and serve people.
Did the book, were you called to write that book? You're a woman of faith. Did it come out of you? Did somebody encourage you?
It's a great question, Joe. And I always tell people, it was never on my bucket list.
Mm.
Never something that I had dreamed of or thought about. You know, a lot of people think about writing or dream about writing a book. Mm. Was never really in my wildest dreams. And still to this day, I pinch myself that actually happened. And people say, oh, are you going to write another one? I'm like, let's take it one at a time, right? So for me, I worked in higher education, and my background is in training and development and higher education. And I jumped off from my higher ed career in the late quarter four of 2019 to pursue my own business. And as you know, what happened early in 2020 was not a great time to build a business. And really, I was working with a lot of school corporations at the time. And so early 2020 hit, my kids couldn't even go to school, let alone me going in and working in schools with athletic teams and that kind of thing. And so really during the pandemic, I was blessed to be home with my kiddos. My husband is a firefighter. He's a frontline guy. And so we just kind of regrouped here a little bit. But then as we were coming out of the pandemic, I was like, okay, how am I going to transition my business? How do I pivot? You know, we were all talking about pivoting. And so that's when actually I have a friend who works for my publisher. And I met my friend for coffee. And I was asking her, tell me a little bit more about what you do. And so that's when then the idea came. And I ended up meeting with my publisher and just kind of talking through my career and that kind of thing. And she said, I think you have a book in you. She said, people need to hear what you are sitting here telling me. And I was still a bit skeptical. Thank goodness for a wonderful editor. But really, I say, you know, I referred to the shell collecting earlier during our conversation. And for me, the book is kind of a culmination of all of the different shells that I picked up throughout my career, right? Oh, I like this diagram. I like this assessment. I've picked up this concept and this definition and this Harvey Firestone quote, you know, kind of thing. And so that's really what it was for me. And really what the book instilled in me was that I am an expert. I do know what I'm talking about. Now, when it came time to publish, I kind of laugh that publishing a book was kind of like having a baby, right? Like, what if my baby's ugly and everybody thinks that my baby's ugly, right? What if I put this book out there and people think it's malarkey and they're like, what is this lady talking about? So yeah, I did have that, scare, maybe fear of fail, right? Right before the book went out. Mm-hmm. But it's been a wonderful blessing. And so long question or long answer to your question. Never dreamed about it, but was encouraged with it once others kind of heard my story and what I had to put out to the world.
And now that it's done, do you feel another coming on?
Yes and no. There are times when I'm like, I'm picking up another seashell and like, oh, that might go, that might be another, you know, go in another book. But that's not where I am right now. I am at the point of, my greatest responsibility is launching two teenagers really well, into adulthood. And, so that's really my highest calling right now. Of course, the book and my business is important as well. But I don't feel like I have the bandwidth right now to take on another book. Mm-hmm. That may be on down the road in another 4 or 5 years. We'll see. We'll see what God says about it.
That's right. And your empty nest in a couple of years, like you mentioned, you never know. Yeah. You talk about going from average to all-star. Mm-hmm. Explain.
Absolutely. So the title of my book is Average to All-Star, and it's equipping young leaders to start strong and go further faster. Right. So a lot of my work, as I mentioned before, was in higher education. My passion is emerging leaders. Hmm. And when I say emerging leaders, I'm normally talking about ages 18 to 28, right? That they're really coming into their own. They're trying to decide, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I don't know about you, but I'm still not sure. But you know, they're really coming into their own during those years, during those college years and during those early professional years. And I found that the work that I've done over my career, a lot of people say that it's kind of intuitive, like, Charlie, how do you know to do that? How do you know to say that? How do you know to coach them through that? And I think that intuition is truly a blessing. It's a gift that I've been given that maybe others don't have. They have gifts in other areas, but, I really feel like average to all-star, when you take emerging leaders and you help them really understand who they authentically are, that helps them to start stronger and go further faster in their lives and careers. And so think about that trajectory, right? There's actually a graph in the book that if young leaders are able to start stronger and go further faster, it's this trajectory, right? And over the course of 30 or 40 years in their career, that's amazing, as opposed to a trajectory that's much smaller. Let me give you an example. The first time I ever took a strengths assessment to learn what my strengths are, I was 31 years old. And that seems young, right? And I remember taking, it was the Clifton Strengths, first time I took it, and I was like, yes, one of my top strengths is connectedness. And I never knew what to call that, right? So I loved that I had a term that I could call that. And I was like, yes, you know, of course, getting your top five strengths is very empowering, right? So I loved it. But then I was walking back to my office after that session, and I got mad. And I was mad because I was thinking, I am 31 years old. Had I known this information when I was 21 years old, I think about how that would have changed the teams that I worked on, possibly the jobs that I looked for. I had a great career, don't get me wrong, but there are things that I'm like, it could have changed the previous 10 years of my life. Wow. And so that's really thinking about that. And I can still feel that in my bones, right? I can still feel that. I wouldn't necessarily call it anger, but I was kind of like, man, like I missed out on 10 years of knowing this information. And so I wanted to do that for young people. And so I really felt like I kind of stepped into my calling that day, right? And so my calling is to help young leaders authentically understand who they are so they can get on that trajectory, and really go from average of not knowing your strengths and maybe not knowing who you authentically are and going to all-star. And I think that's one thing that the, a couple of years during the pandemic, the great when people were leaving their careers and going to something else and trying other things.
Resignation.
The great resignation. Thank you. My old brain couldn't come up with resignation. I really think that's where the great resignation came from.
Mm.
Right? People were saying, this isn't authentically me. I have a time to kind of hit reset here during this whole pandemic thing. And some of that changed for people. And so I think if we can help young emerging leaders go from that average to all-star by really understanding their authentic selves, that's what I'm called to do.
Hmm. I remember the first time, so I took the DISC assessment, mm-hmm. and I remember very similar feelings. And yes. I probably took it in my 30s and thinking to myself, yeah, now I have a name to what I know I've always been. And I kind of wish I knew that. And I wish I knew others so I knew how to interact with them. It was a very eye-opening experience. Those personality assessments, you said strength assessments. I'm not sure what the categories are in, but they are very important.
Well, so many times I think when people take an assessment, they just assume that it's a personality assessment, right? There's all kinds of assessments. I mentioned several different types, some of my favorites in the book, but you know, strengths is where your strengths are, right? There's personality assessments, that DISC assessment, there's motivation assessments, there's all different, there's communication assessments, how you communicate. So, and I really think that the more information you can get from that, and that's really what I do with emerging leaders through coaching, is we work through assessments and what does that mean to you? And then when you can layer those assessments on top of each other and really understand who you authentically are, that just helps you live more fully into who you were called to be. And like I said, sets you on that trajectory towards really making a maximum impact in your life and career.
Yeah. And it also helps knowing that others are similar to you and dissimilar. It just, you kind of feel like, I don't understand myself. How can anybody else understand me? But now we're putting sign, okay, I have these traits similar to these people and it's different to that. It just kind of helps organize and structure, put some structure.
It does. And it helps you know how to approach people as well. Yeah, you know, one of the things that I do in a lot of some of the strengths workshops that I do is I will give people frames with their name and their top five strengths in them to set in their office. Right. I believe at Gallup, they actually list people's strengths on the outside of their door, like their office door, their placard. And so when I walk up to that door and I see Joe's strengths, I know how to approach you the way that you want to be approached, right? Mm. Not just how I want to approach you, but what's going to be the most effective way. So yeah, I think it really helps you to not only understand yourself, but really understand and work effectively and have huge impact with others as well.
Mm. I think outside of my door, my number one strength would be my marinara, I think. But okay, so
that's a big strength.
Yeah,
don't underestimate the power of a good marinara.
So you have three spheres for your emerging leaders, right? There's character, mindset, and power skill. Let's talk about them a little bit. Character.
Character, yes. So I really look at it. I look at a lot of things through the lens of an athlete because that's a huge part of who I am. Mm. You know, I have two children that are athletes as well. And I always talk with them about these three spheres that you just mentioned. Of course, part of being an athlete is having that. And this applies not just to athletics, but in general. For instance, my son is a baseball player. Very blessed. He's going to be going to play baseball in college. Wow. Obviously, there is a functional skill there.
Yeah.
That he has to have, right? And so that's not necessarily one of the three spheres, but that would be a sphere, I would say, off to the side, right? You have to have that functional skill. But then you also look at character. And if you don't have great character as an employee or as an athlete or something like that, then these three spheres that you talk about that we talk about are really, really important to help support that functional skill, right? I think about poor character. If you have a bad attitude or you don't have integrity or you don't understand how to play on a team well, those are character issues, right? If you don't have strong character, you can have really, really great functional skill. But if you don't have character, then you may not make the grades and you're going to be sitting on the bench. You may be suspended or expelled from school and not be able to play. And that's going to affect your team as well. Not just in the athletic sense, but that's true within the work world and a lot of the different areas where we work, right? And so character, having that functional skill is important, but having character that supports that is really, really important as well. And I find that athletes that perform at a pretty high level, if they don't have that character piece, many times the character piece is what keeps them from getting to a higher level. Or employees from getting to a higher level. Does that make sense? Or teammates that you know, aren't able to function at a really high level. So character is a very, very, very important underpinning, I believe, to functional skill and you know, that, like I said, that may be athletically or it may be in the work world or in your family world or what have you. So,
and the character doesn't necessarily mean personalities. It's, it can be somebody with just the strengths needed to have strong character to be part of the team, the organization, et cetera.
Yep. I, you know, some things that I would throw into that sphere of character is diligence. You and I were talking about diligence earlier, right? Discipline is a character piece. Attitude is a character piece. Impact and influence, we've talked about that a lot. Integrity is a character issue. You know, think about how many corporations out there have integrity as one of their core values, right? Kindness, courage. There's all kinds of things that you could put in this, in that sphere, in that circle that we have that are our character. And I encourage people as they are mentoring and coaching emerging leaders to really look at character. Where are those emerging leaders really strong and speak that into them? And where do they need to be bolstered with that as well? And that's where then coaching and mentoring, really what Average to All-Star talks a lot about, is looking at where do they need to be bolstered and how do we build that character muscle in those emerging leaders.
Character muscle. Very good. And then we go to mindset.
Mindset. So just before we started our call, I've actually just finished a facilitator guide. I'm going to go work with a women's basketball team after we're done here, which I'm really, really excited about. And the whole thing, they're in their postseason tournament. And I'm not talking anything about winning. I'm not talking anything about preparation. I am talking about mindset, because mindset impacts every single area of our life, right? I believe, just think about the word mindset. It's literally saying that I am choosing how to set my mind. I'm not reacting to what other people say. I am choosing how I am going to react in my mind to a situation, right? And so some of it is, and I think it's especially important for emerging leaders to understand this piece, right? Mindset is so important to happiness and well-being. Mindset is so important to drive. It's important to flourishing. You know, it's important to just grow, that growth mindset. We talk a lot about growth mindset. So really curating our minds instead of our minds reacting to circumstances or things that are happening, I think is really, really important, especially, especially for emerging leaders. Like, that's the kind of thing, again, like my strengths, I wish I would have learned that at like 18, 19, 20 years old, right? Really working on curating my mind is really, really important. Being proactive in my mind and how that, and not reactive. Because many times when we're reactive, that can be more negative, right? Like, I want to be defaulting at positive mindset, right? And I always say our brain is the biggest muscle we use in any situation. We can train that muscle just like we train any other muscle in our body. It's the most important muscle to train.
Shirley, can anyone be trained to be a leader?
I believe so. I think there are some leaders that are more evident, that become like when you see them. To me, leadership is influence. Leadership and influence are like first cousins, right? And so when I look at influencers, especially when I go into a group of, you know, I attend a lot of sporting events, a lot of choir events. My, you know, my daughter's into music, and I love, like, when my kids aren't performing, I will be right there on the front row. Okay. But when they're not, I love to sit high in the bleachers and just observe young people and what's going on. I always say that, like, Friday night, you can go to a high school basketball game for like $6 here in Indiana, right? I can't go anywhere for $6. And I believe it's the best ticket in town because you get to see young people performing at their best, be that the ball players, be that the band, be that the cheerleaders, be that the dance team that performs at halftime. Like, to me, that's the best $6 I could spend all week long. And I probably should pay double because to me, it's worth that, right? Please don't tell our athletic director that. But like, to me, that's important. And I love to sit high in the bleachers because I love to watch what's going on. And I love to watch, you can see influencers, right? So many times we think of influencers right now, like if you ask a young person, what's an influencer? Oh, they'd be like, oh, that person on YouTube, or I want to be an influencer, or social media, you know, kind of thing. But influencers, they're the ones that are leading the student section in cheers, right? They're the ones that are in the the timeout, like the coach is coaching, but they're the ones that are giving high fives and like getting everybody ready to go. To me, those influencers are leaders, right? I would also argue that many times there are influencers who influence in maybe not a real positive way, right? That are, you know, trying to get people to do things that maybe aren't the best for them to do. I would argue that those are leaders. They're influencing, right? We just got to get them on the right path and going in the right direction and get them on that trajectory, right? And so I do believe, you know, go back to the my definition of leadership. It's people that solve problems and serve people. And I really believe that anyone can do that.
Anyone can be trained to be a leader. They just want to become a leader. Obviously, if they don't want to, but are there natural born leaders? These are these influencers you're talking about.
Yeah, I believe they are. I believe there's a aura about them, right? That they're maybe more evident, and that you look at them and you're like, oh yeah, you can pick them out of a crowd. Some of them have that more forward, like that comes forward from them that they're a leader. But I do believe that there are others like that are that may be behind them or aren't the first ones that are out in front that are doing a lot of really great leading. Right. I think it's the student that just the other day I went into a classroom to do a presentation. I was having trouble with the technology. You know, it wasn't the student that you think of as being the obvious leader. It was the quiet kid in the back. He came forward and helped me get all this technology ready to go. He solved a problem and he served a person, right? It's a leader, but he's not the most obvious one.
Your third sphere is power skills, unfortunately sometimes called soft skills.
Yes, yes. Preach that to the choir, Joe. I believe that too. Obviously, I did not call them soft skills because I don't think there's anything soft about them. I do believe that they are power skills. Those communication skills, problem-solving skills, interpersonal skills, how to relate to each other, work ethic. You know, there's a number of different power skills that to me, this can power skills can kind of almost be the sphere that is can be a catch-all sphere, right? Of what skills do people have that really make them powerful? What makes them authentic and who they really are? And those are the things in solving problems and serving people, those power skills just help push them to the top.
Perhaps the term, because the opposite of soft skills obviously would be hard skills. So I work in technology and there's lots of these great, great engineers, right? Really smart mm-hmm. people that are engineers that are building things and perhaps in some cases don't have the greatest respect for sales and marketing and some of the non-hard scales, skills. So they're called stuff. I don't know. I'm just a theory I'm throwing out there. I don't really like either term, we shouldn't really separate. There's just different skills.
Absolutely. Well, and really power skills or soft skills, sometimes those are difficult to measure. Right? How do you measure influence?
Right.
Measuring influence is much more difficult than measuring temperature. Right? And so measuring temperature to me is that hard skill because there's a specific way to do it. Measuring influence is more of that softer skill, or we call them power skills, because there's not really a way to measure it, but yet you know it when you see it.
Hearts and minds, winning hearts and minds, very different than how many widgets they made or, you know, features on an application or whatever. It's not tangible. So perhaps that's where it comes to, even with hardware and software. We know hardware, we can touch it, but the software is what drives it. And
that's a great analogy. To hard skills and soft skills.
Yeah. I even think of a music. A guitar is hard and the music is soft. You know, I mean, there's the analogies go on. So there's these three that you feel that with these three, you can turn anybody who wants to be a leader into a successful leader.
Absolutely. And I don't think that's, once we do that, I don't think that's the arrival point and where they stay. I think it's a constant looking at, where you are in all three of those spheres, right? You know, I remember hearing a quote, and I don't have it right with me, but it was the CEO of Coca-Cola was talking about, I would say that these three spheres could be glass balls, right? The CEO of Coca-Cola was talking about one of the glass balls is your family and one of the glass balls is faith and something. And think about juggling those balls and think about, if you have to drop a ball, which ball are you going to drop? They're glass balls. You don't want to drop any of them because if you drop them, they're going to shatter, right? To me, that's what these three spheres are, right? It's not like, oh, I have arrived with good character. You have to continue to work on character. I have arrived with power skills. You got to keep developing those skills. I have arrived in mindset. Mindset for me every day is a discipline, right? And to me, if you drop one of these balls, one of these spheres, then it's going to affect your leadership. So it's not arriving at these three. It's continually working on all three of those spheres.
Your book, the title, it actually mentions young leaders. Why young?
That's my passion group. And really the call of the book is for more people to mentor and coach emerging leaders. So the book is not necessarily targeted at emerging leaders. It's targeted at those that can influence and bolster these emerging leaders. Because when we look at what's happening in our world, think about right now, we just don't have enough young leaders in the pipeline. Baby boomers are retiring in droves. You know, think about that huge generation of baby boomers. And then that next generation is Generation X. Generation X is very small. That's my generation.
Me too.
And you think about the invention of the birth control pill. And so we have a much smaller generation, right? And so with the baby boomers that are leaving leadership roles, there's not enough of you and I to fill those roles. And so we're asking millennials and Gen Zers to step into leadership. And quite frankly, they're not ready. I'm not sure I'm ready. Right. And so that's really what the call of the book is all about, is how do we bolster young leaders and get them ready to fill these leadership gaps that we have?
Shirley, earlier in the conversation, I mentioned I've had managers before that thought they were leaders. So if you have somebody who is a manager, who's more related to tasks, as you mentioned, and they want to become a leader, you'd walk them through the lessons that you have here in the book.
I would. I would go through the three spheres, and we would look at where are they in terms of those three spheres, where what areas do we maybe need to develop in those three spheres for them specifically. Because I think if you're going to be teaching other people to do it, you have to lead yourself, right, before you can lead others. And then, you know, the three spheres I talk about early in the book, and really then the rest of the book is a simple three-step process. And that is to discover people's strengths, discover where they need help, and maybe managers, discover to develop, how do you, I give tips, different assessments and those kinds of things on how to develop those three spheres. And then I think a really important third step that a lot of times many of us miss is to deploy. Okay. So discover leaders, develop leaders, and deploy leaders. And I really think sometimes we don't deploy real well. Sometimes we forget that step, right? We're like, well, I've taught you and you've come to the workshop, now go do it. Right. And I think deployment and helping them understand how to do that is really, really important so that they know their what they're really good at and where they can do that at a really deep level, how they can deploy at a deep level with the strengths and the skills that they have in order to really make a maximum impact. Because think about it, a lot of times we leave the workshop, you know, like I did when I discovered my strengths, I leave the workshop, left that workshop, and I knew what my five strengths were. But then I was like, okay, what's this mean? And how does it change my behavior? Right. So that's what I would do with managers is kind of look at those three spheres and then really work with them on the people that they are leading. How do they discover their strengths, develop those strengths, and then help them deploy them for maximum impact?
What role does technology and especially now AI have in leadership?
I think it is a wonderful addition, right? I believe in the power of face-to-face, people-to-people, right? Like I would love being in the room with you. I love seeing your face in technology. Yeah. You know, maybe I'll have to come to Tampa from Indiana. That might not be a bad gig. But I would relish that. Like I would love to be in person. And, you know, I think about even over the last several years, what technology has brought us. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I think that will only bolster and help underpin leadership. AI is going to have an impact. I don't think I have a crystal ball that I can sit here and it kind of blows my mind almost, right? On what impact AI is going to have. I'm not really sure. It's going to be fun to see.
It really is.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
It's going to affect everything, and I think in the best way possible. To be able to ask something that has consumed all the books that you've mentioned, all the books on leadership, you know, into one body and be able to ask the questions and be able to pull from all those sources is an incredible advantage. It's an incredible advantage. So
power.
It's power.
It's powerful. Yeah.
I mean,
and I love your mindset on it. Like, it's positive. It's going to be good, right?
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Because there's so many people out there that are like, I am not sure. You know, but that's their mindset, right? They've chosen to be in that setting of their mind to be afraid. You don't. Yours is like, bring it on. Love that mindset. Keep it up.
You know, the car industry took out the horse industry, right? But what did it do? It created many more jobs in the car industry, tires, engines, you know, ancillary. It's just, I once asked the one of the AI engines, the large language model, the LLM, to explain to me quantum physics as if I was a fifth grader.
That that'd be how I would need it explained as well.
And it was great. It was like your teddy bear is in this room, but it's actually in another room as well. And it was very, I mean, this is tremendous. I'm so excited for it. You also mentioned that with leaders with me, I always, people just tend to, if they think they're a leader, but they don't have the traits for it, you don't think they do, and you are their boss, or you're in a position to do so, how do you address that to them without discouraging and degrading and being gentle? Because sometimes with a lot of leaders, there's some ego there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's where I believe coaching comes into play. I actually, in the book there, I have a coaching continuum. And you know, there's a difference between teaching. There's a difference between training. There's a difference between therapy. There's a difference between mentoring, you know, and they're all on this continuum. And that's where I love where coaching kind of comes in the middle of all of that, right? It's not necessarily I'm telling you what to do, but it's asking the right questions to get the person to discover that on their own. Right. So maybe taking a situation from where they are leading and maybe need some help with that. Right. So walking them through a number of coaching questions to help them discover that maybe that wasn't the best way to address that issue, first of all. But then, okay, so that wasn't the best way to do it. Now, what do you think would be? And then to think through those scenarios. So I love the value of coaching and the power of coaching, because it's not just me telling you what to do. Coaching is leading on a journey of self-discovery and self-elevation. In terms of skills and that kind of thing. So I love the power of coaching. I would go directly to coaching in that situation.
Let's talk about, you were a D1 athlete, Charlie, you know, and you've been coached for a long time. And without that background, without that experience, I mean, how much does that influence what you do now?
To tell you the truth, I don't know. Because I've never had it any other way, right? I am totally grateful for that. You know, I think about when I was, you know, I was born in 1971. Your listeners can do the math on how old I am. It's all good. I was born in 1971. And think about Title IX coming into play. Like, I have seen over the course of my lifetime, women's athletics just become phenomenal. I mean, like, I was watching women's college basketball the other day, and my husband and I just looked at it and I said, wow, where women's basketball came from when I played to where it is now, I absolutely love it. It's phenomenal. Yeah. Right. And so I just think about how blessed I am when I think about my lifespan and Title IX coming in and girls getting to play and girls finally getting, you know, a fair, whatever fair is, right? But at least getting and having parents who helped instill that in me. Like, I was one of the earliest people that got to play club volleyball. Right. Like, and I'm so thankful that my mom and dad saw that as, okay, Charlie, you have to understand, as a freshman in high school, my dad's nickname for me was Olive Oil from,
Popeye,
tall, gangly. Like I say, I was a big, tall goony. Right. And so I set a goal as a freshman in high school that I wanted to play college volleyball. If you would have looked at me as a freshman in high school, you'd been like, oh, there's no way.
Wow.
But my mom and dad knew that that was my dream. And so this was the early stages of club volleyball. Like, when I was a junior and a senior, to be able to even have a club to go play in was pretty amazing. But then to drive 1 hour each way, a couple of times a week to practice and, you know, pay the amount of money that my parents paid, I'm eternally grateful to them. And so I think about those early days of even club ball and that kind of thing, and then being able to play in college, it was a wonderful, wonderful blessing. I'm sure that had an impact on mindset, on discipline, on all of those different things. It helped me more fully understand who I am and what I, what I'm called to do. You know, I think about that experience now with having two young athletes in my home. And, you know, like I said, I'm getting ready to go talk with a group, a women's basketball program. Just being able to do that and to be able to relate from having been in that is a wonderful, wonderful blessing. And I wouldn't change it for anything. And I don't really know how to answer your question because it's just always been that way. And what a blessed life I've been able to lead with that.
And of course, Title IX is when universities, colleges have to give the same scholarships to men as they do women. So it's groundbreaking. And, you know, I coach.
Well, it's not even scholarships, but like if they bought the boys' team shoes, then the girls' team needed.
Oh, budget too. I didn't realize that.
If the boys got gym space, the girls got gym space. I mean, it really leveled the playing field and changed the game. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. So, and, you know, if the school offered 8 boys varsity sports, it had to offer 8 girls varsity sports. So think about the number of young ladies that then were getting opportunities to play, you know.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have 2 daughters and I coach them both in soccer and, you know, even women's soccer, you mentioned women's basketball. I'm from Connecticut, right? UConn is, you know, one of the great legacies and, the advent of women's sports and just coaching along. I'm sure you've had great coaches. I'm sure you've had some not great coaches, but you learn what you like, what you don't, and you've carried it on. It's great to have great parents. It's so nice to have gratitude, Charlie. It's very comforting. It's warm, isn't it?
It is. It is. Well, and quite frankly, I don't see any other way. Right. Like what I have been given is beautiful. And I hope I can give that to others. So don't underestimate the power of gratitude. That's for sure.
So I started my business in 93 and I was working way too much, Charlie, and I wasn't paying attention. I stopped playing soccer. I stopped playing tennis. You know, I was just working too much and I got myself up to 340 pounds. And the doctor, she said to me, you know, if you don't lose this weight, you're not going to see your daughter graduate. My oldest was just born. So I spent the next 6-7 months. I lost about, you know, 130 pounds. And people always ask me how, like there's some secret.
That's amazing in that amount of time.
Discipline. Right. I now have a person that's this wonderful, beautiful girl that I have some responsibility for somehow that brought into this world. And now, you know, it's just more than me. And now I got focused. I got had control and just discipline is what I use. How does discipline play a role in your life, Charlie Lyons?
It's every day, right? Discipline to me is diligence. Right. One thing that I've been working on with growing my business is just you have to have that discipline and that diligence. Right. One thing that I started in 2024 was, you know, I kind of look at what are key indicators for me. How am I going to win today? Like, what do I need to do today to win my day? And I really started thinking about that. And I started like writing things down. I have my wonderful little journal that, there's just all kinds of good stuff in here. But just started writing those 3 things down. Like what are key indicators on winning my day? And how do I do those same things day after day after day after day? And I kind of broke it down into this is my morning, right? These are things that I have to do in my morning to win my morning. And I'm already got steam then, right? It's rolling. How do I then win my midday? And there's 6 or 8 things in every one of those. Some of them are physical. Some of them are nutrition. Some of them are just noticing things in beauty. Some of it is what am I grateful for, right? And so, and then I have my evening time. What are the things that those key indicators that I have to do? And I actually have a spreadsheet. I'm not typically a spreadsheet girl, but like, I want to track that stuff, right? Like what I'm grateful for today and what good food did I get to eat today? right? What special moments did I have with people in my life? Like, I want to track that stuff because I want to be able to go back and look at it. Now, I haven't been very disciplined the last couple of days on actually filling out my spreadsheet, but the thing is, I don't really have to fill out my spreadsheet because I'm training my mind with that, right? Like, oh, I've won the day because I did that. Oh, that's one of my key indicators. And so I'll go back and fill in my spreadsheet, right? Because I think that's important, just the discipline of doing that, because if not, things fall off to the side and you don't really think about those things. But that's one thing that I'm working on in 2024, on how to be disciplined and diligent.
Diligent. I heard kind of routine in there, order, willpower. Mm-hmm. I have this ongoing thesis that you mentioned continuum before, that discipline is kind of a spectrum and there's no wrong answer. You know, we certainly see a lot in athletics, you know, what's needed. We see it in leadership. We see it everywhere. Some people have a very kind of militant, you know,
that's not me.
Yeah, not me either.
Not me.
There's no wrong way. It's just, you know, whatever they feel it, but it's always interesting given people's backgrounds or perspective, how discipline plays a role in their life. Charlie, what motivates you?
Other people motivate me. Like, you know, I about the last year I joined a gym, and my husband was kind of like, do you really need to join a gym? And I was like, yes. I could go out and walk. I could go get on the elliptical. I could lift weights here at home, but I don't. I need to have community. I go to a class. I see my friend Rhonda. Hunter leads the class. There may be other people that come and go. Like, I need to have community and have other people. I don't mind doing the work, but I'm not going to do it on my own because there aren't other people involved. You know, so for me, that helps with my discipline. Other people motivate me to be better, to help them be better. It's about people for me.
And how rewarding is it when they do better or do well, and you play some role in it, no matter how small it may be? It's wonderful.
Well, yes, thank you, but it's really them, right? Hopefully I can be the motivator and maybe encourage and make them think in a different way, but it's really about the action that they take.
So then how do you measure success?
That's a good question. I think for me, success is... seeing those little disciplines and winning the day personally for me. And then it's also seeing others get on that trajectory, right? Doing those little things that help them start a little bit stronger. Like, I'm going to be better tomorrow because I learned this today. Right. And continually it's not big jumps, but, those small little steps on moving people forward.
Yeah, again, there's no wrong answer there, but it's interesting
it's
how
soft.
It ties in. Yeah,
it is soft. It's soft.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah, soft sometimes has such a unpositive, but it's a soft, meaning it's not that tangible, but it's still very much wonderful,
you know,
and acceptable.
We have a friend, my husband and I were talking yesterday. We have a friend who was turning 40 yesterday. And I said, do you remember turning 40? And he said, no. He said, I don't remember turning 50. And that was only a year and a half ago. But I said, I remember turning 40. And I said, you know, I remember my office was here and so on and so forth. And I said, I remember at 40 giving myself the authority to be softer and rounder. Quite literally as a 40-year-old woman, right? But yet... moving into maturity and confidence in who I was, like, I don't have to be with stuff. I can be a little softer. I can be a little rounder around the edges, and that's okay. Softer and rounder.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
Amazing what age, the maturity brings, where you just kind of lean back on certain things, isn't it? You get certain things happen. And, you know, I remember when my daughter was born, I mentioned before, it's like there's small things going on in my life and they just all go away. Yeah. Just all go away. Yeah. You know,
the beauty of perspective, right?
Yeah. The beauty of perspective. Like you said, when you're at a big gym and you like to sit back, not only are you watching the players, but you're also watching the spectators. You're kind of getting a whole seat of what's happening there. And it's wonderful perspective to see how other people and hopefully enjoying and being happy. Charlie, thank you. So I was so excited when we set this up. If anybody is listening, how can we get in touch with you?
Sure. Very easily. CharlieLyons.com. And I know you'll have, people are always like, how do you spell that? And so it's Charlee. Quick little note there. My dad had a girl in school whose name was Charlie. And so my parents loved the name. They couldn't figure out how they wanted to spell it. So my mom's name is Sharon. So they took the S-H-A-R from her name. And my dad's middle name is Lee. L-E-E. S-H-A-R-L-E-E. Lyons, LYONS.com. So, and yeah, from there, that's my website. Amazon, Average to All-Star is on Amazon as well. So, yes.
We make sure we put it all in there. Next time I'm in the greater Indianapolis area, perhaps you, your husband, and I get a cup of tea. Thank you so much for your time today.
I would love it. Let me know when you're coming. I'm about an hour away, but we will make it happen.
Very good. You be well.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypins.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site. Consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. It's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversations.